You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, it's another episode of Earth Station 1, and yes folks, we are going to be looking at one of the more popular TV shows on the CW, and it's interesting because it is comic book based. Shocker on the CW that there's a comic book based TV show. No, we're not talking about Flash, we're not talking about Arrow, we're not talking about Legends of Tomorrow, or we are not even talking about Supergirl coming to the CW. We are looking at iZombie, which is based off of the comic book by Vertigo Comics and by the same title. It's an interesting mix, and it's going to be fun for my co-host to be talking all about it tonight. And of course, speaking of my co-host, let's say hello to Mr. Michael Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, sir?
I am fan-tiki-tastic. We are heading into October. This is just sort of a prelude to our October countdown to Halloween episodes where we go all dark and spooky. And this is a great way, I think, to start us off because, yes, zombies are part of that genre. This is a little different take on zombies, but a welcome one. And it's a fun show. So I'm looking forward to speaking about it more in detail.
Mm-hmm. You were raving about it, and you actually got me to watch the first episode of it.
And it's a fun show.
It is. If only I had time to be able to watch the rest of it.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys have to say. And, you know, hey, as we like to say, there will be spoilers, folks.
Absolutely, there will be. We're not going to spoil it too heavily, but we'll get into it. So if you've never watched an episode and you just are wondering why you should, you might want to give us a listen, because I think we're going to give you some reasons to do so, even if we do spoil a couple of things. But if you certainly, you know, are afraid of that sort of thing, then yes, you might want to wait until after you're finished with the rest of the season to tune in to us.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, after this, I won't have to watch it. I'll just listen to what you guys have to say.
We don't go that heavy in this spoiler.
Oh, damn.
I would never want to discourage people from watching it.
Okay. When I have 5 minutes, I'll start watching it again. So awesome. So with that being said, we want to hear from you guys. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. All right, let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we find out what's on our mind. And we are going to actually be joined by Mr. Bobby Nash. Come on out of the airlock, Bobby.
Woohoo! Fresh air. Well, semi-fresh air.
Well, yeah, this is the station. We recycle everything on the station.
It's all fast. Well, you know, it gets a little gamey. We have to air out the airlock ever so often. So,
well,
but good to be out where I can stand up, stretch, and, you know, see you guys. So always good to be back.
We actually are, all three of us are together because we all went to the movies, and we went to go see a remake of a remake of a remake. Yeah.
A remake.
Yeah, we went to go see the new version of The Magnificent Seven. And it was great for a Sunday morning to go see a Western. And it was fun. And that's what you wanted from a movie. It was predictable. It was cliche in parts. But it was a fun film. It didn't, you know, it hit all the spots a Western is supposed to, pretty much. What do you guys think?
Well, the plot of Magnificent Seven, obviously it was originally made Seven Samurai, and then, of course, made into a very now classic 1960 movie. Even without the remakes, the plot is pretty much, we've seen it 100 times. You know, the village or the township is being overrun by bad people, and the townspeople reach out to a group of crazy renegades that are willing to fight with the odds being against them, and all that. And look, it you know, and to their credit, Antoine Fuqua, who directed this, and the rest of the cast, the crew, and everybody else, they're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. They know exactly the kind of movie they want to make. They want to stay true to the plot and just have fun with it. I think they succeeded to a large degree.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And go ahead, Bobby.
Oh, I was gonna say, I agree. I definitely agree. Go ahead.
No, all I was going to touch on was, I think the characters they got, you know, represented, you know, from actually going back to Seven Samurai all the way up, pretty much you have the different experts in the fields. You know, you have the gunslinger, you have the knife guy, you have the Indian, you have the tracker, you know, you have the gambler. And it's pretty awesome to see just it modern, a little modernized, but carried over the same themes through all three films.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I noticed in terms of making it a modern film was how the villain is different. You know, in the original Magnificent Seven, it was just a gang of bandits had taken over the town, or coming to the town to take everything they had. And in this version, it's more of a crooked businessman who's coming to take the town because of the gold. And so that was really the thing, is just a changing of who the villain is to making him a businessman.
Well, it almost seemed like in this one, it seemed like it was more focused. You could tell right away who the bad guy was and who mm-hmm. the good guys were. And you didn't have to ever expect like any of the good guys would turn into bad guys or anything.
Right. And you know, in terms of casting, I mean, they did a really good job casting this movie. I mean, certainly you can't go wrong putting Denzel Washington in, you know, in a movie. But they surrounding Denzel with an excellent cast, especially guys like Ethan Hawke, Chris Pratt, and Vincent D'Onofrio, who was absolutely fantastic as the bear wearing a man suit.
The only thing I will say about Vincent is sometimes he gets a little too into the part. Like on reflection, I was thinking there was quite a few scenes where I didn't understand what he was saying.
Yeah, his voice was rather high and squeaky in this one.
Yeah, he was mm-hmm. almost too into character. Like, you know, like if I was just thinking to myself, you know, it's like, oh, I'm Nick Pozzato, right? And I wrote the script and I'm like really happy because, you know, Fuqua's directing it and Denzel's in it and all these other guys, you know, Vincent D'Onofrio's in it. It's like, oh, wow, they're going to say my lines. This is really awesome. And then you watch the finished film and you're like, I can't understand what he's saying. Like, he totally butchered my words. And so I appreciate Vincent for being in character, but I would have appreciated more if I think he was a little bit more, if he enunciated a little bit more. And I don't think it would have taken away from anything. And granted, a second, third, fourth viewing, I'll probably know exactly what he's saying. But that initial viewing, I was just kind of like, because there was nothing wrong with the sound in our theater. That's for sure. Right. So, and he was the only one I had. I mean, I could understand, you know, the ethnic characters more than I could his. So. It was just a wrong choice, I think, of an accent, but you know, I give him credit because that's what you get Vincent for. I mean, he goes in as we've seen with all of his performances, you know, he'll take it and makes it his own.
Mm-hmm. The one fault I had with this movie was Chris Pratt, truthfully. I thought, really? Yeah, I love Chris Pratt. Don't get me wrong, but it feels like he plays the same character in every movie. It felt like he could almost take his character in this, put him in Guardians of the Galaxy. He's Star-Lord. Put him in Jurassic Park, you know, or Jurassic World or whatever it was called. It feels like there wasn't much range to that. It felt like he was the same exact character.
I just assumed that was why they hired him, was to play that guy.
Right. I liked his character. Do not get me wrong. I love the scene. Right at the beginning where, you know, the guys took him out to the field to shoot him and he did the magic trick. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. And then the other brother was like, oh, come on. I like magic tricks. And then he shoots him in the forehead.
I do understand what you're saying. I don't blame Chris for that, because I think, like, to Bobby's point, I think they were like, we want someone that kind of acts like that. And, but, you know, it's interesting that all these characters, even though they're playing types like Seven Samurai and the original Magnificent Seven, they're not the same characters.
No.
Like, all the character names are different. They're not playing these actors are not playing the same characters that were in the 1960 version. But to that point, I mean, when you compare Chris Pratt to Steve McQueen, there was an element of seriousness, I think, to Steve and some of the other, some actors like that, that I don't think Chris has got yet. At least he hasn't had a chance to play. Like, I know that it was very popular a while back to say that, ooh, Chris Pratt should be the next Indiana Jones. He should play Indiana Jones because, you know, he kind of does that in Guardians of the Galaxy a little bit. He plays that rogue character very well. However, I think with Indiana Jones and with some other characters, there's a seriousness to them that Chris has not got a chance to play yet. I think he can, and it would have been nice if this was the vehicle for him to do so. He hasn't got a chance to do that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been kind of nice to see, like, if he had, you guys, because, you know, spoilers. I mean, he's one of the guys that doesn't make it. And, it is kind of telling that you've got this, like, such a lighthearted character who meets his demise. You're not really sure what to do with that.
Well, he has the heroic death though too.
Well, they all do.
Yeah, in their own way. Even, you know, the one who ran away came back.
Yes.
You know, you knew that was going to happen, but it was just the
There's
way.
There's no surprise in this movie. Like,
yeah.
You know everything that's going to happen in this movie. I think just people who maybe have never seen a film before might be surprised.
Yeah, if you've never seen a Western before or a buddy cop movie, you'll be surprised. But that is about it. It was fun. And that's what I want. I needed right now, especially with all the things I got going on. And I walked out of there feeling, okay, that was a lot of fun. And that's what you want.
Yeah, you didn't really have to. Yeah, you just went, you sat back, you enjoyed the ride. And that's what you needed. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, exactly. And it's better than the last Western I went to go see, where I felt like I had an hour and 45 minutes on my hands that I'll never get back.
What was that?
Hi-Ho Silver, buddy.
Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I was going to say, I'm like, you better not be talking about Hateful Eight.
I have figured out how to watch.
I haven't seen Hateful Eight yet. I am really embarrassed to say.
That's okay. That's all right. I'm sorry, Bobby.
We finally got to see Django, though.
Yeah, that's a good one. I was going to say, I have figured out how to watch and enjoy the Lone Ranger movie. All you need to do is watch the last 20 minutes when they start playing the march.
Oh, when the horse was on the top of the train station. Yeah.
You know, and the theme starts playing. And if you start right there and just go to the end, you're good.
I agree with
that. It's
an awesome movie. I agree with that.
If you forget the hour and 15 minutes before that.
Speaking of themes, I think, you know, obviously the theme song to The Magnificent Seven is almost as iconic as the William Tell Overture. So I was interested to see what they were going to do in this movie. And this is the last bit of composing work that was done by James Horner. He had three scores, I guess, three movies that he worked on come out after his death last year. And when this went into production, he started working on some of the themes, and someone else that I guess that he works with continued on the work. And let me tell you, the music in this is beautiful. It's got the James Horner signature sound, so that, you know, if you are a fan of his work, you know, you like the soundtrack to Wrath of Khan or Aliens or I think Master and Commander is another one that he did, or anything else that he's done. I mean, you know that he's got, you know, the themes that he uses a lot. I don't want to say that they sound similar, but you can definitely recognize a James Horner sound. And I thought the music in this was great. And I think it was a good move to have elements of the original Magnificent Seven theme incorporated into the rest of the score. But then, you know, finally, when you watch the credits, that's when boom, you get the full, like, original, you know, adaptation of, yes. Uh-huh. And, so you're walking out of the theater feeling like dun, 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 dun. And it's just like, yeah, that's a pretty, I mean, that's a great way to end.
I was wondering though, when I was walking out, it's like, God, I want a steak now.
That's a sign of a good Western.
Exactly.
It was also too, it was very funny. Cause, Mike and I went and saw it together on Sunday. And when it's over and we were walking out of the theater, Mike goes, that might be the shortest credits I've ever seen recently. Because it wasn't Bert. There was not a lot of CGI in the movie.
Oh, true.
So it didn't have those, you know, sometimes you watch 10 minutes of you know, animators. And it didn't have all that. So the credits went by fairly quick at the end.
Yeah, it was really fast. And they did a lot of credits in the beginning, too, mm-hmm. which they don't do a lot of times now either. So
I think that was a nice throwback to,
yes,
to the old Westerns that used to do that, where you'd get all this stuff up front.
But I think you could really tell in this movie that Anton and the rest of the cast and everybody was just really having fun with this. You've got these beautiful VistaVision-type shots. You know, all the tropes from a Western are there. Apparently, the director growing up with his grandmother used to watch Westerns all the time. And so, this was his chance to kind of just show his love for the genre. And you could tell he kind of pours everything into it. And, it's gorgeous to look at and it's really fun. And, I can't say, you know, it breaks the, it, well, it doesn't need to, you know, this doesn't need to reinvent anything. This is a remake, which is basically telling the same story, but with a different cast, having fun in a Western type setting. I it's just fun.
No, agreed. It's interesting how good this movie was in bringing the Western back to life. And if anything, the cinematography in this was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And just the on the scene shots, it didn't feel like it was shot in a movie spec lot, you know, or anything in studios. And it's just, that's what I enjoyed about that the most.
And I would definitely go and give a lot of credit to the stunt coordinators too, because this is a very action heavy movie with a lot of moving parts. But it looks so good and there's so much going on and just some beautiful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I enjoyed it and I would recommend it to anyone who wants to go see a great matinee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's a fun flick. This wasn't one that I was like, oh my God, I can't wait till this comes out. Oh my God, I can't wait. But, you know, once it came out, you know, it was just one of those things. It's like, you want to go see it? Sure, let's go. And then, you know, you come out and you're like, that was fun.
That's even better.
I don't know if I'll race to own it or anything like that. But I'll tell you what, next time it's on, if I flip through the channels and there it is on any of the channels that I have or whatever, I'll stop.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If I see it. And, you know,
I'll stop and I'll put on the code caption so I can understand what Vincent D'Onofrio is saying.
Bingo. We've actually started doing that with a lot of TV shows, especially like when we were watching Downton Abbey or Game of Thrones. A lot of times we would put the closed caption on so we could understand what some of these characters are saying.
Sometimes you need that, because the ones that get me, there's sometimes where characters will be talking at normal and then all of a sudden they'll say something really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't understand what they're saying. You know.
Exactly. And you'll be like, what? What? And it's like, oh, like,
I'm not deaf yet.
Exactly. I don't want to sound like my grandmother. What? What did you say? So that's a lot of it. Or if it's a really thick accent.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, I definitely think this movie is definitely worth watching. And like Mike just said, if it's on cable, I'll be there. But yeah, I don't think I'll own it. But definitely, we want to hear from you guys at home. Did you like it? Did you not? Did anyone, you know, even go see it? Because it was the number one movie this week. So some people did. And I was actually impressed for a 10:30 in the morning movie. We went to go see it, and there was probably about 40 people in the theater. I was actually really surprised.
We went to a 10 a.m. and there was maybe 10 of us.
Wow.
It was not hugely attended, but the screening that we saw, but I didn't want to get up that early either. So I don't blame him.
So there you go. So please write us. Let us know what you think. We're going to go take a break and we will be back now with iZombie.
Hey guys, it's Nick, and, well, time to talk movies. No, not that. How about something else? Much better. So, we had this idea for a small spin-off, a second podcast, if you will, where we would watch an entire movie series so we can compare them one-to-one.
My name is Bond.
Bond.
It's Bond.
Bond.
It's Bond.
It's Bond.
James Bond. Bond.
So every time Q goes...
I missed you. What a pity.
Yes, the legendary 007 wit. Or at least half of it.
I'm your new quartermaster.
We will watch it and compare them. From the highs...
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
To the lows.
I thought Christmas only comes once a year.
Tune in every other week as we compare every Bond girl, every plot, and every henchman on Mission Briefings, starting January 2016. Find Mission Briefing on iTunes or as part of the Myopia Defend Your Childhood feed.
How often can you say you've been changed? Really changed by a party?
Now we're going to talk a little bit, well, all about iZombie, the first two seasons of the show on the CW, as well as the original comic that it is based on. And to do so, we've got returning to the station. We've opened up the airlock, and here is the award-winning Bobby Nash.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
All right, how are you? Are you able to breathe okay? You guys finally got that under control?
Nice to come out here where there's fresh recirculated air.
Well, somewhat recirculated, but yes. Not so fresh, unfortunately, but probably more than what you're used to.
I was going
to
say, you go spend a couple of months in the airlock and see what you
How have you been, sir? How was your Dragon Con?
My Dragon Con was exhausting.
Then you did it right.
I did it right. I had an absolutely fantastic time. Having fewer, because I had a table this year, I had fewer panels. So I actually got to come home with my voice intact. So it was nice.
Wow.
It's been a couple of years since I could say that.
Absolutely. And we also have with us, joining us, a fellow ESO host. He also was coming back from Dragon Con. Kevin Eldridge is here.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Bobby.
Hey.
Great seeing you both down at Dragon Con.
Absolutely. You had a good convention overall. We did hear from you, of course, on our ESO Network special.
Yeah, I had a great Dragon Con, as always. It was excellent. And the most recent episode of the Flopcast, as this comes out, was our Dragon Con review. So if you want to hear me just rambling on and on like a crazy person about all the cool stuff that I saw and did down there, it's Flopcast episode 229, I believe.
Cool. All right. So it's the most recent one.
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. We will definitely have a show. We will have a link to that in the show notes. You know, actually Dragon Con a little bit is relevant for this discussion because one of the things I love to do is panels and fan panels, and I don't get a chance to do that very often. And when I saw that there was a fan panel, not just a fan panel, but they had a lot of the celebrities or the actors that are part of iZombie at Dragon Con this year. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, even though I got a chance to see a couple of them in the Walk of Fame area really briefly, I wasn't able to participate in any of that. So ESO allows us the chance to do that a little bit. Did you guys see any panels or see the celebrities from iZombie at Dragon Con?
I didn't, no.
I did, actually. The mayor of Chickentown, Felicity, and I, we were able to attend one of the big cast panels that they did, which was very, very cool. So we saw Rose MacGyver and David Anders and Ali Michalka. I don't know how you pronounce her last name. But we did go to a panel with the three of them together, and they were very cool, very funny. That was a really fun panel. I was actually on a panel about iZombie, not at Dragon Con, but at Convergence earlier in the summer also. So there's a lot to talk about this show.
Yes, yes. And I guess we'll start at the beginning with the comic book series, which came out in, it was a Vertigo, a DC Vertigo book that came out in 2010. And it was by Chris Robertson, and Michael Allred did the artwork. And I'm a big fan of both writer and artist for this series, so I grabbed it right away. Did either of you check out the original comic series?
I borrowed your trade and was looking through it, and it was pretty interesting. It's a little different from the show, and I'd seen the show first, and I found it enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through the series. I think there's four trade paperbacks collecting the series, and I've read two of them. So I've got the other two only halfway through. But yeah, I think it's really fun. And yeah, very different from the series. They pretty much took Liv, the character, even though her name is even different in the comic book. And most of the basic concept of her character is the same in the comics, but the whole tone and the supporting cast and everything is very different on the show. But yeah, just like you, Mike, I'm a huge fan of Mike Allred's art, just that beautiful, super smooth, cool style of his. I always love seeing his art. And Chris Robertson, I have not read too much of, but I know he did the Cinderella series, which was connected to the Fables universe. Right. And yeah, those were cool.
Yeah, yeah. It would, like I said, I grabbed it right from the beginning. Usually if Mike Allred's part of it, and plus I knew that this was going to have, you know, zombies and more other kinds of monsters in it as well. So I was attracted to it right from the beginning, and it was a fun series. Now it is a different, it does still center around a female protagonist. In this case, her name is Gwen Dillon. She is a zombie, and some of the rules are the same. She does eat brains, but she's a grave digger. So she gets her brains that way. And she does, gain access to the deceased memories, and thoughts, by her consumption of the brains. And it also keeps her, a steady diet of brains keeps her from becoming a mindless zombie, a traditional zombie, like Day of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead, that kind of thing. So I think that's pretty much the only thing that was lifted for the show. because she also, Gwen also has a best friend who is a ghost from, I think, the 1960s, if I'm mistaken. She has another friend who's a were terrier. He's not quite a wolf. He turns into a very large dog terrier when the moon is full. All sorts of other ghosts and creatures are in the series as well. And it's a very, very different. There's some bad guys, some demons that are throughout the series, and it ends with this huge kind of big apocalyptic event. Spoilers there, but I definitely, even though it I mean, for those people who are familiar with the show that are listening to this now, they might be like, wow, is there anything in it that, you know, should we read this? And I definitely think you should. It's by two very talented comic talents. And also, I think the tone from the show is there. It's not heavy, but it's not all comedic. There's some parts that are really intense. And I think it's just a sort of a fun take on the zombie genre. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons why it was created too. I mean, obviously zombies, are a hot topic. And they're all over hot topics, I'm sure. But especially around 2010, but I think everybody was looking for a different take on them. I know I was. So I think, you know, in some ways it kind of helped the talent behind it. But the fact that it did have zombie in the title might've turned some people off might've turned some people off of the TV show when it first debuted a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. I got to admit though, in terms of the name of the character, for the show, I love watching a show about a zombie named Liv Moore.
Yeah. Yes.
So the name for the show, I think, is really funny.
And that's the thing that applies to a lot of the characters on the show, is that there's a lot of double meanings behind a lot of the names of the cast. A lot of just, you know, the Major Lily White and Mr. Boss, and a lot of the names are kind of bordering on silly, but some of them will have some kind of clever double meaning if you think about it.
Yes, I'm also quite fond of Blaine DeBeers.
Yes. My favorite is the woman who starts dating Babineau. She's from the FBI, but she's a missing persons investigator, and her name is Dale Bozzio, because if you're a 80s new wave music fan, as I am, there was a band called Missing Persons, and the front woman, her name was Dale Bozzio.
Ah, that one got by me.
Got by me as well. Well, since we're here mainly to talk about the series, I obviously we couldn't do that before we mentioned the comic. And like I said, other than the sort of premise behind the how zombies work in this universe, I think, and maybe the tone to an extent as well, I think very little is carried over. Although with this new season, that might not be the case. I think they might bring some elements from the comic, a little bit more elements because of this new group that we met towards the end of last season. But that remains to be seen. So, yes. So the TV show. So the CW announces that they're making it into a TV show. All of us who are involved in comics are like, woohoo, because we always like to support, I think, the comics that are, especially stuff that's not superhero driven, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of nice to see alternate comics stories become TV series, movies, whatnot, just because it kind of shows it shows the public that there's more to comics than just superheroes. So that was kind of nice. But even though I'm a big fan of the comic, I think the thing that really clicked with me and said, oh, I'm definitely watching that as a show, was that I found out that Rob Thomas was involved. Once I found out Rob Thomas was involved, I'm such a big Veronica Mars fan. I was like, you know what? Whatever he does next, I'll be watching it. Do you guys kind of feel the same way or?
Oh, absolutely. Veronica Mars is one of those things I came into late. Thank you for that, by the way. it's one of those shows. Mike kept going, you should watch this. I'm like, I don't want to watch this. And
yeah. I'm like, he was right. I think you do. Yeah.
So that's one that I missed completely.
It doesn't happen often, so I will claim it.
You should watch this. And so and as good as that was, the writing on that show, same thing. When I heard Rob Thomas was involved with this, it definitely moved it up to the, I've got to check this out.
Veronica Mars, I've never seen, but did that have a similar, like, procedural kind of a format, but with the twist the way iZombie does?
Pretty much. I mean, she was a detective, or she, yeah. Her dad was a detective. Well, he was started off police officer, and then later, and so she kind of was this, you know, Nancy Drew junior detective kind of thing, in high school. And boy, that's doing the show such a disservice. But I mean, it's got enough of a procedural so you can say to studio execs, it's a procedural, and so they go, okay, cool, we'll give you some money. But apart from that, it was so much more than that.
Yeah,
you, so much more.
Yeah, it's Veronica Mars, and I know we're getting off topic here, but Veronica Mars is kind of like, it's part Nancy Drew, part Buffy the Vampire Slayer, part Law and Order SVU.
Okay.
But I do think Veronica Mars is important to iZombie, not only because of Rob Thomas, but then, you know, as a showrunner, he brings over Diane Ruggiero, I believe is the last name, and I hope I'm not butchering that because I have so much respect for her as well. She worked on Veronica Mars as well as a bunch of other shows. She actually co-wrote the script for the Veronica Mars film that came out a few years ago that busted Kickstarter, rather. And so she is, I think she is the main showrunner of iZombie, with Rob Thomas helping develop. And I don't know how often he shows up. I mean, but right from the beginning, everything that I was kind of disappointed in that wasn't from the series, from the comic book series, I was actually okay with, because right away iZombie has this. It could take place in the same television universe as Veronica Mars. It's got that same tone to it.
Yep.
And speaking of Rob Thomas, I really enjoyed how in the season finale of season two, we had an appearance by Rob Thomas, the other Rob Thomas.
That has been a joke that has run through all of his shows since Veronica Mars. So when he finally showed up, that the musician was on the show, I thought it was so... It was like one of those things where we're like, well, it's about time. But but the ending of that too, when we find out that he actually, you know, spoilers, people, where he's murdered and the zombies are like eating his brains, but they're playing like Matchbox 20 songs. I love that kind of irreverence.
We'll be overrun by like mid-90s alt-rocker zombies now.
So yes, right from the beginning, I watched the pilot. I was pretty impressed. I was pretty impressed with like the tone of it. I was kind of feeling strange about it being a procedural. Because look, I'm not, you know, I mean, this is my first rodeo in television. I know that studios love procedurals and they like to convert any concept into procedural. I think the trick for a lot of producers is to figure out how they can make a procedural interesting. And in this case, I think, you know, the hook with the comic, as far as being having a zombie there that can have the memories of the person that, you know, was murdered, is a big plus as far as you know, together they solve crime.
Yes, I remember watching the pilot, and I had, and this is one of the things that I was nervous, because at the end of it, the pilot, we see her get the glowy eyes and her monster vision or whatever, and she's fighting and going into the rage, and I was just like, oh, okay, so this is going to be like a procedural that turns into the Incredible Hulk at the end of every episode. And so that was my fear, because you know how when a lot of shows, when you see something like that in the pilot, that pretty much sets up how every episode is going to be resolved. And I was so impressed that we don't see that again, that ability again for a bit. That they only break it out when they need it.
Yes.
Yeah. For show purposes. And it's not... that's not the answer to every episode. And I thought that was really good.
Yeah. I mean, in general, I'm not a fan of procedural shows. I don't watch any of those CSI, Law and Order, any of that stuff. But, and I think part of the issue is that you're watching the cast, you're watching the same people do the same things every week to solve the crime or whatever. But I love the twist of Liv taking on a whole new quirky personality every week. And that really throws such a fun twist on whatever steps they're going to go through. she's this completely different character bursting out at all the wrong times. So that's really made it fun. And you can get into that, the formula trap on not just procedurals, but so many shows in general. Like we went through this with Smallville, like the early episodes of Smallville, the freak of the week format.
Yes.
And I was a little concerned about settling into a formula, but I think they've managed to keep things interesting with just all the crazy plot developments happening besides the murder of the week, if you will. And now also such a crazy conclusion to season two, hopefully it will lead into even bigger changes to come now.
I think the way that the show is structured, yes, certainly it's got a structure to it that like a procedural where it, you know, someone dies and they investigate, she eats the brain, and then she becomes the attributes of whoever, you know, whoever's brain that was. And so you have a little fun with it that way. And I think, I mean, that sounds like it could get old after a while, but I think the mythology of the show, the running storylines that they do, and the fact that even though the show is kind of lighter in tone, that there's real consequences to things on this show that I think you watch because you just like they have, you know, and they say in zombie shows, no one's safe. Well, in iZombie, that's pretty much true as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does pick up that from the zombie side of things where, you know, at any time, they're not afraid to kill off characters.
Right. And I also, you know, I think, too, you know, when we're talking about characters, and you guys mentioned that she has the visions and basically becomes a different character every week. I think a lot of props have to be given to the actor who plays Clive as well. Malcolm Goodwin, because his character, there comes a point where you start going like, is he not noticing this?
Yes.
And then in season two, they actually address that he just assumes it's a side effect of the visions and lets it go.
Right. Cause he thinks that she's a psychic.
Right.
He doesn't know that she's a zombie until much later. And you're like, surely he's noticing, you know, that she has personality traits. But you're right. He's just attributing to the fact that she has visions and that affects her,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really nice because after a while, after a season and a half, you're kind of like, is he just dumb?
Yeah.
and like some other procedurals that I've seen, sometimes the gimmick can overpower the actual mysteries, the stories that are being told. And in that case, I usually tap out. I use as an example for myself personally, the first few seasons of Monk on USA, I loved because I just thought it was well-written. Here you had a character who was extremely like phobic of everything. And, but the crimes were, kind of interesting, but it didn't seem like it. Then it seemed somewhere in the second or third season, it seemed to me that they were just going, well, let's try to think of the most uncomfortable position we can put him in. Now, Tony Shalhoub is an amazing actor, but you could kind of tell it was kind of gimmicky, and just trying to get him to react to certain situations was the basis of the show rather than really coming up with interesting mysteries or crimes for him to solve. And so I tapped out of that show, and I don't know if it got any better or whatever, but I was kind of worried that would happen with iZombie, because and I guess we'll start talking about the characters, but the actors, because Rose McIver is just, I mean, she is amazing. And the fact that, you know, they give her all these alternative characters to play, and she does them so well, and, not just, well, first of all, just her main character that she does. I mean, she is not an American actress.
Right. Yeah, it was weird seeing her speak at Dragon Con, actually, a few weeks ago, because she has this lovely New Zealand accent, naturally, which, of course, she was using. And it's a very adorable accent. She's a real pleasure to hear her speak in her native accent. But yeah, on the show, she does a perfect American accent.
Yeah, and that's her base character. And then you add all these layers of other characteristics that she has to play every episode on top of that. Mm-hmm. And I think she excels. It's always fun to watch. I mean, you don't sit there and go, she's just going to, she's going to have the characteristics of a whatever it is, a porn star this week, but yet they still manage to make it fun.
They should let her eat a brain from someone from New Zealand.
So she can talk.
She can just relax for one episode.
I thought that there was something there. Wasn't there some point in season two where she did use her real accent?
Oh, maybe she did.
I want to say yes, but I'm not sure.
I think she did. I think there was some character that she did. Just it was real brief. It wasn't like the main part of the story. I want to say maybe when she was trying to get in to expose the lab, I think she used her. There was somebody there with an accent, and I think she used that her real accent to play for a little while. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, that does sound familiar.
Because I remember, because it was a shock to me because I had seen her on another show, so hearing her with the American accent was kind of a shock to me. Because before this, I had seen her. She played Tinkerbell on Once Upon a Time.
I did not know her at all.
I've never seen her before this.
Yeah, I did not know many of the actors in this.
Also, she's just a dead ringer for the Mike Allred original design of the character.
That's true.
You open the comic and, yep, there she is.
Well, that's another thing that I love too. The taking the opening credits, taking Mike Allred's work from that, or allowing him to do the artwork for that, gave it sort of that connection with the original series. And even to this day, they still after the commercial break or whatever, they're going to a different a time jump, location jump. It always has that sort of comic caption.
It comes into comic art that then kind of fades into
doesn't that usually have like a little
caption
title that's kind of fun always usually I like that. It kind of gives it just a sort of narration quality that's fun. The show is really fun. It's not like there are intense moments, but I mean watching this it's like I look forward to it just because I can look at it and go, this is gonna be fun,
right? And even though it is a procedural and we're talking about this, like most shows, there is that underlying story that plays out over the seasons. And even though we're watching this procedural, we got to solve a crime, there's all this stuff with the bad guys going on that keeps us really interested, because a lot of our characters do not interact in every episode.
Right. No, absolutely. And there's a lot, this got quite the amount of characters that are supporting characters. And yes, it's not just Liv and Ravi and Clive solving crimes. I mean, there's a lot more going on, And I think that the world that they've created in season one that they could play off to and get real deep into in season two is even opened more by the results of what happened at the end of season two.
Right. The finding out of how many zombies there really are, and the fact that I love the twist that was originated in the comic, that if they continue to eat brains, they don't devolve into the mindless zombies, and so they can actually be productive members of society. And when the show starts, we're led to believe that there's just a few of them. But as the show progresses, there's a lot of zombies running around out there. to the point where Blaine has created a business to keep them all fed, which is brilliant. So, and I like the fact that it's not just, ooh, zombie, we got to kill them. Or, and some of them you don't know who the zombies are, because we have had some surprises of people that we turn out later find out who that they are. But I love the fact that also, too, they have to put hot sauce on everything because everything tastes terrible.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing they can really taste.
Yes.
Like it has to, little paprika, not going to do anything because they're not going to taste that, little cinnamon. Nope. That's pretty strong, but nope, that's not strong enough. They need the hot stuff.
I can relate to that because I dump hot sauce on everything, and I'm starting to suspect I might be a zombie.
Oh, well, now we are too. So
we got to find out what your wife's really been feeding you.
When Rose MacGyver was speaking about the food came up, and of course how the prop people the on the show prepare stuff that looks like brains for her to eat. And she had a story, though, about how there was something that they made that she was not supposed to eat. It was just made to be sitting there. So it was disgusting. And she accidentally took some bites out of it and was like, what was that? What went wrong with this thing? And then they were, no, you weren't supposed to eat that, Rose. That was that was just to look at.
I saw a behind the scenes clip from one of the cast members as well, and I do believe that the brains that she typically eats are made of turkey.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's a turkey mixture that they put together. I think it was Malcolm that posted it, and he went over and he was just like, you know, taking samples from it, and the cooks were like, "Don't eat that," you know, and. Anyway, so let's speak of Malcolm as Clive Babineau, her partner, well, the main cop there. To be honest, Bobby probably remembers this from the first episode. I did not like him at all. He has become an acquired taste for me. I did not care for him. He was my weakest link of the show cast wise when it started. But I will defend him now with fisticuffs if anybody says differently now, because he's great. I think that he's done a great job, and I feel actually embarrassed somewhat for not giving them the benefit of the doubt when it began.
Yeah. Well, he certainly had the weakest character. I mean, he was the odd man out when the show started. His character was probably the least interesting in terms of how he was written. Because he's the normal guy with all this other, you know, fantastic stuff was happening around him. He had no clue. I mean, Ravi was, even though Ravi is also a normal guy, he was still in the midst of this, oh my God, there are zombies. How can we solve this problem? Clive was kind of, you know, just written as just a cop. But I think once we got to know him, the same kind of thing, once we got to know him, he became such a more interesting character. And I certainly think, especially once he started mixing with the rest of the cast, you know, not just with Liv, but with all the other characters, I think he really, really blossomed, because this cast has a lot of great chemistry where you can pair up different people each week and it still works.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that, you know, again, spoilers, but now that he knows, I think it was good timing. I don't think it should have been a third season with Clive in the dark.
Yeah. I think that kind of feels like just a huge sigh of relief to the cast and the viewers and the writers that, okay, now he's in on it. Now we don't have to tap dance around that all the time, and he can just interact with everyone more completely.
Yeah, yeah. I guess next we'll just go to Ravi, who is absolutely delightful. He is like an MVP of this show. I mean, Rose gets, of course, the main headline, and, you know, Babineau's the cop. But and Ravi's not like essential to this, but yet I can't imagine this show without him.
Right.
And a lot of it, I think, has to do with the actor. And I don't want to butcher his name, but is it Raul?
It's Raul. Yeah. Cooley?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
I've never seen him in anything else before, but now I want to see him in everything. He's so good.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with him either. I'm unlike Rose or Malcolm Goodman, I'd seen them in other things. This was the first thing I had ever seen Raul in, and you're right. He is, I don't want to call him comic relief because I think that does him a disservice, but his character, the way his character views things and deals with things, especially in terms of Liv's problems, he seems to get a great glee out of seeing what kind of brain personality she's going to get this week.
And he kind of fills that role that you could compare to Felicity on Arrow or Cisco on Flash, in that he's the scientist. He's kind of behind the scenes figuring things out and supporting the field agents who are going out. And he's also a quirky, funny character at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Who almost found a cure for the, for the zombie plague. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, he is. Yes, his character is very talented. As far
he's doing
as
he's doing a lot of weird things with mice.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess as far as characters goes, the main one that I we have to mention too is Blaine. Uh-huh. And look, every time I see David Anders, I think of him first and foremost, probably as I think the first time he really made an impression on me when he played Stark on Alias, Julian right. Stark. And he made such an impression on me on that show that every time I saw him in anything else, and he's been in a lot of other things that I've seen, I just go, oh, it's Stark again. Hey, there's Stark. And sure enough, in the first episode of iZombie, I'm like, look, hey, it's Stark. Now, whenever I see David Anders, I'm like, hey, it's Blaine. He has done such an amazing job with this role, and credit to the writers and then the producers and everything, that it's one of those rare instances where he's gotten a chance to play somebody that, in my mind anyway, as a character is equal, if not overpowering, his former character that I first was introduced to.
Yeah, he's another one that it was funny seeing him at Dragon Con, because he looks like he's in costume, like for the show in real life, because he bleached his hair. So when you see him sitting there, it's like, oh yeah, there's the guy, there's Blaine.
There's Blaine.
Whereas like Rose MacGyver wears a wig on the show as Liv, so she doesn't really look like her character in
person.
So
she's not as committed.
That's right. That's right. She didn't actually turn into a zombie for the show.
No, I think the character of Blaine too has, who could have been a one note character from how the show started, has become so three dimensional in all the things that have happened to him. Watching his up and down roller coaster existence over two seasons has been phenomenal.
Usually I'm not a big fan of, oh, we've got this great bad guy character, let's turn him into a good guy. We saw it happen with Spike on Buffy. We've saw it happen to an extent with some characters on Alias, the show that I knew him from before, as well as, I mean, it's just something I've seen over and over again. And usually it waters down the character for me, because you've got this great villain, and they don't know what else to do with them. So they're like, well, but he's popular, so let's have them work with him. And now we get to know him more, and all of a sudden he's more of a good guy now. Mm-hmm. I was worried about that happening with Blaine, but they've done such a good job with it that I'm okay with it completely. And I even feel sorry for him. I mean, when he got quote unquote killed by the mob in season two, I was like, oh damn. Like, I felt bad for the guy.
Well, he got better.
He did. Yes.
Well, and of course his character is the one responsible for Liv becoming a zombie.
Yes. Yes. And you know, the cast has great chemistry with one another. Mm-hmm. So to your point, Bobby, anytime you could put any two of these characters in an elevator together, and it's going to be a fascinating 15 minutes.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And now we kind of skipped over, and we mentioned him earlier, but Robert Buckley is Major Lillywhite.
Yep, definitely a big part of the show.
Another one of those characters who could have, from the beginning, probably you were like, oh, this guy won't last long. But they found such interesting things for him to do.
His dark turn in season one really sold on him.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, here's the ex that she's going to, get back together with at some point or whatever. And, but, he took his character arc season one was so intense and full of so much danger that I was with him every step of the way. And then it carried over to the second season too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I still have a hard time with the two of them not being a couple. Like, when I see them both with other people, it kind of bothers me. As far as characters-wise goes, I'm like, because I guess they to me, they feel like a strong enough couple that they should be together. So when, and the characters that they put either with since then, they broke up or whatever, haven't been as strong. So I haven't really felt that they were, like, worthy of that.
And we also mentioned Ally Machalka as Peyton, who is another one who learns later about the zombie. You know, I love that all these guys are learning at different times. And she kind of disappeared from the show for a while because she was just a guest star in the first season, a recurring guest star, but they made her a full-time cast member for season two. So we get to see a whole lot more of her.
Yeah, I mean, so many of those characters in season one were just in the straight man or straight woman roles, and she was one of them. You know, here's the ex-boyfriend, here's the cop they work with, here's the best friend and roommate. And yeah, it's been fun seeing those characters develop, and she's gotten to do some more interesting stuff in season two also.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, she's really come to her own the second season.
I think that the only actor that I had that I recognized from anything before this, all the leads were new to me on iZombie, but the one that I definitely knew from lots of stuff before was the guy who's chewing way more scenery than anybody else, and that'd be Steven Weber.
Steven Weber.
Is that guy not having a blast on this show or what? I mean, you get the feeling that every time he's on screen, he's just like, I love this.
I would tell you too. He's Steven Weber. I mean, because while he was a recurring on this show, he was also on NCIS New Orleans playing a very different kind of character. So I could just imagine him going back and forth between the two as he's bouncing from Vancouver to New Orleans. You know, how he gets into the mindset of each of those characters, because they are both completely opposites of one another. But you're right. He's chewing a ton of scenery, but he does it so well that I don't care. I mean, I thought he was a perfect big bad for a couple of seasons.
Yes.
And there's just a lot there. And to find that like the zombie apocalypse was created by a soft drink company or an energy drink company. You know, I thought that was a nice twist. You know, and it's not the fact that it's an accident. They know. And he's just this, you know, it's all about the money for him. But, yeah, he plays it with such glee that, you know, when he does get his comeuppance in the season two finale, he deserves it. But now you're like, oh, does that mean we're not going to get any more Steven Weber next year?
It looks unlikely. But you never know.
That's right.
It is a zombie show.
Absolutely. It is. That's true. And it could be, you know, I think they still have the door open for more weird stuff if they want to. I don't know how far they want to go with that, but
yeah, they could potentially dip into the comics a little more and start bringing in the vampires and ghosts and weird dogs or whatever they like.
Yeah. I kind of think almost like now it might be a little too late, but you know, but then again, I think maybe the zombie thing, you know, they've already had their little zombie apocalypse, so that might be played out. So now
when Flash and Arrow show up.
You know. Well, I think Flashpoint is going to change everything so that Rose never becomes a zombie. Oh. And then so we'll have to see how like she can. No, never mind. I don't know. Okay, so. Yeah, we've only got about, like, you know, a few more minutes left, but and we've talked about most of the main cast members, how well-written the show is. Are there any moments in particular that, like, during the first, second season that you recall where you said, wow, this has elevated this show up for me?
I mean, one strong moment that comes to mind, I think it is Blaine crawling up out of the grave in season two after his death and burial. That was so crazy powerful. Just, you know, his clothes are gone. He's just covered in dirt, and he just stomps onto a bus to ride back into the city.
Yeah, that's a great one. For, you know what? I mentioned it earlier, but when we go in and we find out, we hear the Rob Thomas, the Matchbox 20 song being played, and we come around and we're seeing the zombie soldiers eating Rob Thomas's brains.
Yes.
And that was, I thought that was really funny. There's a lot of good moments, but I thought that was a really good one.
For me, season one, when Major infiltrated the butcher shop, it felt like a different show to me. Like, all of a sudden I was like, oh, we're going. I mean, it felt like a dangerous, like, I didn't know what was going to happen to him. I was impressed that he was, you know, being such a badass, and yet he got caught, and, you know, there was a confrontation between him and Blaine, and this had nothing to do with Liv or solving crimes or procedural stuff or anything like that. That's when I kind of said, there's more to this show than just a, you know, zombie procedural. Mm-hmm. And this other plot line is working for me. I am like, I would watch this show. And that's when I kind of said, this is, you know, and so giving Major something to do all season, the second season, you know, kind of working undercover or having his own agenda, for Max, under Max, I thought that was really, really well done. And that was, like I said, I mean, it was like having two shows in 1 hour.
Absolutely. Yeah. And her family kind of disappeared, which I thought that was the least interesting, was following Liv's family around.
Yeah. The mother and the brother, that's sort of a dangling plot thread that just kind of fell by the wayside, I think. So I suppose they could return to that at some point. I think that was even addressed when Rose was speaking at the convention. I think in her take on it was just that there was so much going on in season two that something had to give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, it was kind of one of those things of, what do you do with that? Because when they last left it, it was a very, you know, interesting dilemma. She could not give blood to save her brother.
Right.
Yeah. And that was another thread from the comic book, is that she did have a brother in the comic series also that she was kind of rediscovering at one point. So that it might have been that they put that in season one with an eye towards the comic, and then decided they'd rather go the way they went.
Yeah, this is the show overall has been one of those that it's not been a huge hit. You know, it premiered, they ordered it to series. Then they ordered an additional 5 scripts, an additional 6 to bring the first season to 19. And then, you know, they kind of, actually the second season to 19 rather. So the studio has kind of been like, okay, you can have some more. Now you can have a third season. I don't know what the official episode order is for the third season. I don't get the sense, though, from the CW that they're as confident in this show as some of their others. Actually, I'm sorry. It says here that the CW has renewed the series for a third season of 13 episodes.
Okay.
So the first season was 13. The second season was 19. And now we're going back to, which is interesting because it didn't feel like the last season had stuff tacked on.
Right.
They did a really good job at stretching that out, so it made it seem like it was all part of the plan. So, but dialing back to 13, I mean, and I don't think it's airing right away, right? Isn't it?
I don't remember when it starts. I have to look.
Isn't it going to be like a mid-season thing?
I think so, yeah.
The CW has so many superhero shows now, it's kind of hard to fit a spot for a
yeah, but this, yeah, yeah. Like the comic book shows are being edged out by other comic book shows now.
Yeah, I do believe that Supergirl, I think, might have had a lot to do with it getting pushed as well.
Yeah.
And it premieres in 2017, so yes, it will be a mid-season.
So, yeah, that's too bad. Because I'm looking forward to it return, and I know they're already filming it. So
yes. I will say this, too. I know this is one of those things Mike and I have discussed many times. especially with these CW shows, the casts of iZombie also fit this mold, that they have, as a group collectively, done wonders with social media, giving us a lot of sneak peeks behind the scenes, you know, showing us them all doing things together, which I think can only help the show as well, because it's helping you with fan interest.
The camaraderie among the cast and the whole crew is so strong that it you like watching and interacting with it in social media, and that gives you even stronger ties to the show.
Absolutely.
So they do a great job at that. And, you know, I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, it's really one of those shows that that is, like I said, I don't know how confident the networks are in it, but I hope it lasts because I do enjoy it. It's one that it's fun, and it always puts a smile on my face because I know there's going to be some entertainment there. So thank you guys so much for talking about it with me.
Oh, thank you.
And yes, thank you so much. And we will be right back after the ESO Con report.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Check out Rec Level 3.
What's that?
We're a gaming, geek, nerd culture fandom podcast.
Ooh. Wow.
And you can find us every Friday at 11:30 a.m. on reclevel3.com.
Yay.
Welcome back, my friends. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Well, it is almost October, and we have quite a few events happening in October that I know at least I'm part of, as well as some of the other ESO Network crew, starting with this weekend, September 30th through October 2nd. It's Archon. I think it's Archon. Maybe it's Archcon. I don't know. A-R-C-H-O-N. Archon, right? It is in...
Whatever you say. I'm just here for the ride.
Exactly. It is in Collinsville, Illinois, which is just outside St. Louis. And our good friend Van Allen Plexico, the White Rocket Podcast, is going to be there. He's very excited. I think he lives in around that area too, so I think he's that's like his local hometown show. So if you are in the Midwest, you might want to check that out. But if you're here in the Atlanta area, October 1st is a first ever NewtCon. It takes place at the Newton County Library in Covington, Georgia. It's a one-day event, and I will be there, as well as another person on this podcast. Bobby Nash will be there as well. This is sort of it's a convention, but it's also a lot of seminars or panels. This is a different take on it. It's presented by the Georgia Piedmont Technical College, and it's a way to help literacy in the community, provide exposure to college as a alternative. We're going to put on seminars. We're going to teach people about writing and writing for comics, and there's going to be a lot of activities it's going to be extremely family friendly. There's going to be, of course, cosplay. Costumes are involved. You can actually have your picture taken with the 501st from Athens. A lot of other talent is going to be there as well. Kirby Eldridge of Lunar Works Productions, he's going to put on a workshop on comics as well. It's going to be a great event, so I'm really looking forward to it. In addition to being just a opportunity for me to get my books out there, it seems like it's a pretty good opportunity to give back to the community too. So I like that part of it. So if you are around, certainly the Georgia Covington area, it is this Saturday, October 1st, from 10 to 2. So it's not even an all-day thing. You can just come and say howdy and be on your way. And I believe it's absolutely free. So you can't beat that.
Free is always good in my book, my friend.
Absolutely. And then the following weekend, October 7th through the 9th, it is Monsterama. You heard friend of the station, Anthony Taylor, talk about it last week in particular. It's going to be a great time. If you love classic era monster movies, sci-fi, that kind of thing, even current, that's celebrated as well. Please come out to Monsterama. It is a great time. It's a great show. It is just a little bit north of the city of Atlanta at the Marriott Perimeter Center. And on Friday, it starts on Friday, October 7th, and I am hosting a Tiki Cthulhuau party. And we're going to have some music, some mermaids, and a little bit of madness. It's going to be crazy on Friday night. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we'll be doing panels. Tiki Zombie artist Peter Cutler will be there. He'll be on a panel talking about comic illustration on Saturday morning. And then myself, a few other good people will be on a panel discussing comic production, comic writing. That'll be on Sunday as well. So the comics will be represented, but classic movies, literature, podcasting will all be represented at Monsterama. So come on out. That's again on October 7th through the 9th. And then on October 21st in the Atlanta area, it's the second annual Spookeasy Electro Swing at the Red Light Cafe in Atlanta, Georgia. And of course, costumes are almost essential for this event. Not absolutely necessary, but look, you combine this event with Halloween, and yes, this is the Halloween show. You're going to want to come in costume. But there will be plenty of entertainment, plenty of dancing, and of course, the resident DJ Q will be spinning the spooky tunes that you can move to. I don't know if there's going to be a Thriller dance, but I think that's almost a requirement, right? At every dance during Halloween, there's a Thriller dance. I would think so. And then towards the end of the month, October 28th, is the Halloween Comic Fest. Now, this is an event that takes place all over the country in local comic shops. The one near me, Lawrenceville, Georgia, the Galactic Quest there is putting theirs on Friday, October 28th. Some are doing theirs Saturday, Sunday. Halloween is technically on Monday, so there might be even some stores doing it that. There might be some stores doing it all weekend long. You'll have to call your local store to find out. But for Galactic Quest in Lawrenceville, Georgia, October 28th, I will be there along with Peter Cutler. We'll have some Tiki Zombie. Of course, Tiki Zombie 3 is available for purchase. We also have some freebies to do, and I think Peter will be doing some sketching. It's going to be a blast. There'll be other guests as there as well. Lisa Shin, who's a friend of the station, will be there. Joe Pruitt, who is the editor and writer of Aftershock Comics, he'll be there as well. That's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to that. And going into November, we've got the Atlanta Comic Convention, November 13th. That's a one-day show that Mike and I like to attend. And we love seeing all our friends there as well. And then certainly last but not least, looking all the way ahead to December 3rd, this just was made final this weekend. I will be appearing at the Northeast Comic-Con and Collectibles Extravaganza in Wilmington, Massachusetts. I'm going back home for a show. This is going to be great fun. This is a show that's put on by Gary Summers, who some of you might know from some of his appearances on Antique Roadshow. He's a fun guy, and he's putting on this event. I am going up, and I will, of course, have copies of Tiki Zombie, the new one, as well as a very, very special comic that should be making its debut on December 3rd at this show. I will have more details on that as it happens, but I'm very excited to announce that I'll be at in the New England area in December. So as long as it's going to – well, of course, since I'm going up there, it'll snow and I won't be able to move an inch. But it's going to be a good time, as are all these shows. If you've got a show happening from now to the end of the year, please let us know. We liked helping promote other shows. It doesn't have to be in the Atlanta area. If you want us to help participate in your show, again, that doesn't have to be in the Atlanta area either. We can talk about how we can help you promote and participate in your show. And if you just want to come on and rave about a show that you've been to, heck, even if you just want to, we're not done talking about Dragon Con. If you want to come on and talk about the awesome time you had at Dragon Con, write us, call us up. We'd love to hear your stories, because we love talking about conventions.
Well, that's going to wrap up another fun episode of the ESO podcast. Want to thank our guests for joining us. Mr. Bobby Nash, thank you so much, sir.
Oh, my pleasure. Always great to get out of the airlock for a night.
Yeah, JD was like writing and says, get Nash out of here. Put him into work. Come on.
And it's like every once in a while we need a little alone time, you know.
Okay. That was an image I just did not really even need in my head. So anything sorry you want to shout out, guys. Sir?
Nothing springs immediately to mind. Anything I have books that are out there.
Any cons you're gonna be at?
Actually, yes. This weekend I am doing NewtCon in Covington, Georgia. It's a one-day show at the Georgia Piedmont Technical College. We'll be doing a couple panels. Actually, Mr. Gordon will be there as well. We're going to be talking comics, so that should be fun. And then the week after that, I am in Savannah, Georgia for the Savannah Quill Book Con, which is on Saturday, October 8th. And then the 21st to the 23rd, I am in Birmingham, Alabama for the Hoover Library and Alabama Phoenix Festival convention that weekend. So, awesome. Sci-Fi Lit Fest is what they're calling it, yes.
Nice.
So lots of travel in October.
Awesomeness. All right, and Mr. Kevin.
Yeah, hey guys, thanks for having me up to the station once again. Always a pleasure, and always happy to talk zombies.
Well, it's nice to know the teleporter worked from the new location of Chickentown.
We are still in Chickentown, although we have been making some renovations. And Cornflake and I are both still recovering from Fump Fest and Dragon Con, respectively. But we're settling in to do more Flopcast shows every week for the ESO Network.
Yay! And they're actually a lot of fun. I listen every week, and it's like it astounds me what National Weather Day it can always be.
Yeah, sometimes we even get a little silly.
No, really?
We try to downplay that, but I'll admit it has been known to happen on occasion.
And here I thought you were the stoic podcast of the ESO Network.
I'm not like on a world tour like the award-winning Bobby Nash, but I will be at a local convention here in the Boston area later in October. I will be at Super Mega Fest in Marlborough, Massachusetts. Not in any official capacity, but I'll be wandering around, so come find me if anyone's going to be there.
Yes.
He'll be handing out chickens to people.
That is correct. Plus exactly. A lot of hot sauce to go with it in case you're a zombie.
Exactly. Just don't let them look at your brain. That's all we ask. So you keep on, you know, when you meet a new fan and they just like keep on staring at your top of your head, you will.
That's right.
All right. And of course, we can't do this without Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure, sir.
And anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Yes, I need to give a big, big, big tiki shout out to the folks at Mug Crate. Mug Crate is a subscription box. There are subscription boxes for almost everything now. There is actually one for tiki mug collectors. It is called Mug Crate. It is a quarterly subscription box. And every quarter, they send you a box containing at least one high quality tiki mug, and other tiki surprises. And this month, this quarter, they just were shipped out. Everybody got an issue, a copy of Tiki Zombie number 3. And I really appreciate the folks from Mug Crate letting me be part of that with them. And it's been really fun as the subscribers have gotten their mugs and their crates and they're opening them up. They've been displaying them, taking pictures of them. And there's the Tiki Zombie comic right there among all the goodies. It's very fun that people are so excited by that. And I appreciate that. For all those who might be listening who have a Mug Crate and got the latest issue of Tiki Zombie number 3, I can tell you that Tiki Zombie 1 and 2, if you like what you read, are available now for purchase. Just go to tikizombie.net. But if you want to find out more about Mug Crates, go to mugcrate.com.
Most awesome, sir. Very cool. All right. I'm going to give a shout out to something that's been keeping me busy for the last few days. William has gotten me hooked on this game called BioShock. It is an awesome first-person shooter game that originally came out for the Xbox. They just released all three games in one pack for the PlayStation 4. So in my wisdom, I picked it up, and I have not been able to put it down. It is a lot of fun. It reminds me a lot of some of the other first-person shooter games, and I can't play a lot of it because, you know, for long term, because I get motion sickness. I think it's the first sign of me getting old. But it's a lot of fun, and the storyline is just amazing. And what William has described it to me is just, it's just awesome. And I am looking forward to going further into this game. And if anyone could give me some hints for it, I'd really appreciate it. Please, you know where to find me at esopodcast@gmail.com, or you could call us at 404-963-9057. As we always like to say, we could not do this show without you guys. You guys have been supporting us so well over, the last 6.5 years now. Oh my God, where has the time gone? And our numbers keep on going up. Our subscribers, our listeners, all of the different social media, and, you know, through iTunes, through Stitcher, Google Plus, and, you know, all these other, you know, places where I've posted it. We also, of course, are on Twitter. We're up on Tinder. We're up on Facebook, of course. We have a great Facebook group, and we've got a great bunch of people. And we also now have what you've known about, the ESO Amazon store, where you can find all kinds of cool, neat stuff, including we'll have iZombie Season 1, and I think it's Season 2 out on DVD already, Mike?
I'm not sure, but it will definitely have put the comics in there.
Yes, we will definitely have those. We'll have it up on the Amazon store, and so please check it out. And if you don't even want to go to the Amazon store, we make it so darn easy for you to go shopping. All you need to go is to the ESO webpage and click on the Amazon link right at the top. And if you bookmark it or just click on it, whatever you feel like doing, it doesn't cost you a penny more. And when you go shopping there through that link, it helps support the network. That way, Kevin could get more chickens in Chicken Town.
Oh, that'd be good. We are running low on chickens.
So anything you could do to help that poor boy, you could do it. Halloween stuff is available. You can dress up as your favorite chicken for Halloween, as far as we know.
Sure you could.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Or if you want to even get more fun, dress as Colonel Sanders.
Hey, now.
That's getting a little personal, I know.
Yeah, come on. Let the chickens be.
So we want to, you know, thank you guys for everything. We will be back again next week, where we jump into the month of October, and Mike is going to do his countdown to Halloween. Ooh. And our next episode, we are looking at some creepy composers. So it should be a lot of fun. And until then, my name is Mike Faber. We will see you next time here on the Air Station 1 podcast. Peace. And we're done.
You've been listening to Air Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. They can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness, and if you get something up there, you can also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Air Station 1 podcast. Peace.
That's it. The show's over. It's time to head home. See you next week here at Air Station 1.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.